Okay, you may be seated. Thank you very much. Thank you for that. I know for some of you that was the most painful applause you've given all year, but thank you very much for it. I could see the grimace on some of your faces. But sincerely, let me just thank you. It's a privilege to be able to stand behind this pulpit and to preach to such a caliber of young people that are gathered in this room this morning. I want to thank Brother Douglas for the invitation to preach this morning. And also, I want to thank Brother Young and for Dr. Evans, who I didn't know was going to be here today, but thank you very much for the investment that you've made in my life. And then, of course, I want to thank my wife, who I did not know was going to be here today. She's sitting in the middle of this section right here, the most important person in this room. I want to thank her for all the support that she's given to me over the years. If you have your Bibles, open up to Genesis chapter 41. Genesis chapter 41. And let me also thank Brother Sparks, who is walking in the back right now. Brother Sparks is the one that 15 years ago, when I graduated from college, for some reason, he decided that he wanted me to work for him. And he hired me to work here at the college in his office 15 years ago. And I owe a great debt to him. And he's been a mentor through all these years. And I just want to publicly thank you, Brother Sparks, for all the investments you've made into my life as well. Genesis chapter 41, as Brother Douglas and Brother Collins alluded to, I somewhat have been given a topic to preach on, and as most of you have figured out by now, it has to do with your finances. So, no big surprise there. So, we're going to begin in Genesis 41. I'm going to start in verse 29. This, of course, is the story of Joseph, probably one of my favorite stories in the Bible. For many, many reasons, but we're going to look at him today as an example. Genesis chapter 41 and verse 29. Behold, there come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt, and there shall arise after them 7 years of famine, and all the plenty shall be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine shall consume the land. And the plenty shall not be known in the land by reason of that famine following, for it shall be very grievous. And for that the dream was doubled unto Pharaoh, twice it is because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. Now therefore let Pharaoh look out a man discreet and wise, and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint officers over the land, and take up the fifth part of the land of Egypt in the 7 plenteous years. And let them gather all the food of those good years that come, and lay up corn under the hand of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities. And that food shall be for store to the land against the 7 years of famine, which shall be in the land of Egypt, that the land perish not through the famine. And the thing was good in the eyes of Pharaoh, and in the eyes of all his servants. And Pharaoh said unto his servants, Can we find such a one as this is, a man in whom the Spirit of God is? And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, For as much as God has showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house, and according unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, See, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt. And let's pray. Father, thank you for your word that you've given to us. Thank you that it is eternal, that it is perfect, that it has the answers for our lives in it. Thank you for these young people that have dedicated themselves to you and to your service. I pray that you would bless this service, that you would help us. Give us wisdom, give us understanding, help us to understand what your word says, and help us to apply it to our lives. Thank you for all that you've blessed me with personally, and I just thank you for saving me and for the life that you've given to me. In Jesus' name, amen. This is a very familiar story. God had prepared Joseph for a task. At the time of this story, Joseph is 30 years of age. It tells us that in a different passage, but he was 30 years of age. And God had culminated his life to a point where he was ready for Joseph to put into practice the things that he had learned. As most of you know, we have 3 weeks left of school, just over 3 weeks. And you're going to enter a season of your life called the summertime. Most of you, if you've been in college, if you were in college last year, you've already been through one of these seasons. For those of you who are freshmen, this is your first time entering into this specific season, a summertime while you're in college. The book of Proverbs tells us that we're to prepare in certain seasons of life for other seasons of life. And this is exactly what Joseph is facing. Pharaoh calls him in with he had no preparation time for this, okay? As far as, you know, we'll give you a year to think about this problem. This is something that God, the opportunity comes to Joseph. He gets called in front of Pharaoh. He goes to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh presents him a problem. And I have written down here five ingredients that Joseph had in his life. And then at the end of the sermon, I have a handout that we're going to look at, something practical that you can apply to your life to make it so that you can be better prepared for next year if you're going to be a student or for the next phase of your life. First of all, I want to say the first ingredient that Joseph had in his life was the ingredient of faith. And we're going to look at Hebrews chapter 11 here, the faith chapter. And I'm going to, if you want to, we're not going to read the whole chapter, but I want to read just the beginning of it. A lot of times when people think of financial preparation, they think, well, I'll need to set aside my faith because now I need to go to work. And I want us to look at Hebrews chapter 11 because Hebrews chapter 11 tells us a different story. It gives us a different outline of how faith really works. One of the things I love about the Bible is it's not just a dictionary of theological terms and even concepts. God made sure that he gave us illustration after illustration after illustration so that we can see and visualize how these spiritual concepts actually look in real life. And here, Hebrews chapter 11, the Bible begins here with a definition. It says, now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. If you're like me, I need pictures to tell me what does that mean. I like graphs. I like charts. I like things that take numbers and take words and put them into a pictorial form. All of us are different, but that's just how I'm wired. And God does exactly that for us here in this chapter. He starts out by giving us a definition, and then he runs through a list of dozens of illustrations. And I'm not going to read all of them, but let me just read a few of them here. Says, Abel offered a more excellent sacrifice. Enoch pleased God. Noah prepared an ark. Abraham sojourned in the land of promise. Sarah was delivered of a child. Abraham offered up Isaac. Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau. Jacob blessed both the sons of Joseph. Joseph gave commandment concerning his bones. Moses' parents hid him 3 months. Moses forsook Egypt. Moses kept the Passover. The Israelites passed through the Red Sea. The Israelites compassed the walls of Jericho 7 days. Rahab received the spies with peace. Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, they subdued kingdoms, they wrought righteousness, they stopped the mouths of lions, they quenched the violence of fire, they escaped the edge of the sword, they waxed valiant in flight, and they turned to flight the enemies of the aliens. It sounds like a group of very busy people. The Bible begins with this chapter, and God gives us a definition of faith, and then he says, you want to know how faith actually takes form many times? Is in the actions you take in your life. Noah could stand there and say, God, I believe you're going to send a flood, but I'm not doing anything to prepare for it. Moses' parents could have said, God, we believe you have a plan for our child, but we're just going to sit here. We're not going to make an ark to put our son in. We're not going to try to hide him. Moses could have said, God, I believe that we can cross the Red Sea, but we're not going to move from this spot. And so the Bible here very clearly gives us illustrations of what faith is, but it doesn't stop there. If you continue reading that chapter, there are more illustrations. Women received their dead raised to life again. Others were tortured. Others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings. Others of bonds and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn asunder. They were tempted. They were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins. They were destitute. They were afflicted. They were tormented. I wrote this down. Faith in God means trusting him when there is nothing else I can do. That's what these people did at the end of the chapter. When you're being burned at the stake, there's nothing you can do about that. When stones are being thrown at you, God has brought that trial into your life. There is no human strength that you have to fight against that. Faith many times manifests itself in two ways. One, It means trusting God when there's nothing I can do, but it also means doing work in anticipation of what God will do. So we see here in Hebrews chapter 11, which is exactly what Joseph put into practice here, there are two manifestations of faith. And a lot of times in my own life, I get confused, and sometimes I think, well, I don't, because of my own laziness or my own fear, I will stand aside and I say, God, I don't know what to do, or I don't want to do that. And God says, by faith, do it. And sometimes there's nothing I can do. Sometimes I have to stand there and say, God, I trust you, whatever I'm going through, I trust you that it is for your eternal purpose. And Hebrews chapter 11 is very clear that there are those two manifestations. So the first ingredient that Joseph had in his life was the ingredient of faith. Do you believe this morning, sitting here in the chapel of Hiles Anderson College, do you believe that God has called you into the ministry? Do you have faith that God is preparing you for that calling? Do you have faith that God can direct your footsteps? Do you have faith in God's master plan for your life? God had designed you for a task. At your age, and even at my age, until we get to heaven, we may not understand everything that God has for us. But God has designed you for a task here on earth. And as sure as Joseph did not understand until he got to the age of 30, and even then he did not understand everything that God had for his life, as sure as Joseph stood before Pharaoh and interpreted that dream, God had a plan, and it was preparing him for that moment in his life. And God has the same plan for you. He has a plan for you that may not manifest itself until you're 30 or 40, or in Moses' case, 80 years old. But it's by faith that we continue to walk and to prepare in anticipation of that plan that God has for us. Let me say this, and then I'm going to move on to point number two. Endure the trials God brings into your life. Here at college, you are experiencing trials perhaps at a different level than you experienced before you came to college. But part of faith is enduring the trials that God brings into your life. But also part of faith is preparing for the future that God is taking you to. That preparation is saying to God, God, I believe that you have a plan for my life. Let me illustrate this by saying, you know, those of you who play basketball or you've been on sports teams, the team can get together and say, we believe that we're going to win the championship this year. We believe that our coach has the answers. We believe, that we have the talent. We believe that we have the tools at our disposal to win this game. But I'll tell you, the person who truly believes the most is the one that comes to every practice, the one who practices the fundamentals of the game, the one who spends the extra hours preparing. That is the team member who has the most faith. So when we say, you know, we can sit in our corners and we can say, I believe our team's going to do great. But I'll tell you, the book of James says, show me your faith by your works. Not faith for salvation. Jesus has done all the work for salvation. There is nothing we could do for that. But show me your faith as a student at Hiles Anderson College. Show me your faith by your works. The students who do the most preparatory work in college are the ones, I promise you, that have the most faith in what God will do for them in the future. Let's look at point number two. What else did Joseph have? The second ingredient that Joseph had and was necessary for his preparation for the task that God had given to him. First one was faith. The second one is wisdom. I'll give you, it's not really a, I didn't get the definition anywhere, but wisdom is the ability to judge correctly. Wisdom is the ability to judge correctly. Pharaoh noticed this attribute in Joseph. He said, for as much as God has showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Verse 39 of chapter 41, Pharaoh notices this in Joseph. How do we get wisdom? Well, the Bible gives us those answers. James chapter 1 and verse 5. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. Now, I don't. One of the key ways that we get wisdom is first realizing that we need wisdom. We only ask for things that we need. If we don't need something, we generally don't ask for it. But as soon as we have an understanding that we have a need for something, then we pursue it. And God says, if you want to pursue wisdom, start by asking me, acknowledging that you need it. A lot of times we have no idea even what we need wisdom for. Let me give you this example, and this is kind of it's a silly example, but I think I've told the story in the staff meeting, but I don't think I've told it in my personal finance class. So if you're in that, forgive me if you've heard this before. A few years ago, we were driving from church, my family, and we were driving a 2000 Chrysler 300. So it was an older car. It had about 200. It was over 200,000 miles on it. And so we knew that at any moment, you know, the car is going to probably be ready for the scrap heap. So, you know, we always had plan B just in case it broke down. And we were on our way home from church. Actually, we were on our way to church, and it started giving us a little bit of trouble, but not enough that we had to stop. We just kept going, and we got to church. And I think this was I don't remember if it was Sunday night or Wednesday night, but it was definitely at nighttime, and it definitely was dark outside when it happened. So we were on our way home from church. We had pulled out of the parking garage, and we were coming down Calumet Avenue. And if you know the corner on Calumet Avenue and 165th Street, there's a gas station there. And as we were driving down Calumet Avenue, we were coming south, going towards the highway, and the car started really acting up. And I thought, you know, the last thing I want to do is break down on Calumet Avenue, because, you know, after church, the whole church membership is driving down Calumet Avenue. And if there's only two lanes there, so if you're blocking one lane, then everyone has to wait, and they're like, we're trying to get home. And then they drive by and they're like, oh, it was you the whole time. That was, you know, that's why we were backed all the way up to the church. So I did not want to break down on Calumet Avenue. So, you know, God, please help us to get off the street, because there's not a lot of places to turn off. You know, you don't want to just turn off at the bar. So we got to that gas station, though, and we, just as I turned into the gas station, you know, the car's like, you know, and while we were turning, these thoughts are going through my mind. It is, I don't know what time it was at that point, but it was dark. And I'm thinking, this is Hammond. I love the city of Hammond. I love the people in Hammond. But I need to prepare for that we may be here for a few hours. So I pulled into the gas station. I thought, you know what I'll do? I'll pull right underneath the light that's by the gas pump. You know how they have the pumps and there's always the light there, even when the convenience store closes, because you can go there and you can use your debit or credit card, the auto pay. So, you know, I'll just pull right there. We'll sit underneath this light. I'll call my brother, and he'll come. He knew someone with a trailer. So we sat there. First thing, of course, I have three kids. So the first thing, they're hungry. So I go into the convenience store. We've got popcorn, snacks. We're going to hunker down for 2 or 3 hours. And we did sit there for 2 or 3 hours, because my brother was at, I don't know where he was, but, you know, it took him a while to get there. So we sat there for 2 or 3 hours. And I had mentally prepared myself for that. So I wasn't too frustrated. I was just glad that we were under a light, because the convenience store did close, and we were the only ones there. And so we're sitting under this light. My brother finally comes. We load the car up. He gets it all loaded up, and he takes it back to our house, where we're going to have a mechanic look at it and see if it's even worth fixing or not. A few days later, I think it was actually Brother Oswardy. I'm not sure if he's in here, but Brother Oswardy looked at it, and, you know, he was trying to figure out what the problem is. Why do we have this issue? And he thought it was one thing, and then come to find out, he called me the next day, and he said, I think we figured out what your problem was. He said, you ran out of gas. I said, what? I said, we sat at the gas pump for 3 hours. All I had to do was get, when I say at the gas pump, I mean at the gas pump. I said, what? He's like, your gas gauge is broken. It shows that you have a half a tank, but you were empty. So we just put gas in it, and it was fine. I said, we wasted 3 hours sitting at a gas pump, and that was the problem. But you know what I lacked? I lacked wisdom. I didn't even understand my own deficiencies at that moment. God had provided, all the pieces were there. He allowed me to pull right up to the gas pump. He allowed the gas pump to be there. The light was there. It's not that I lacked money. I had money in my wallet. Money was no problem. I know how to pump gas. I know how to get out of the car. I've done it many, many times. But the connection was not there, the connection of wisdom. I didn't know how, I didn't even know what my problem was. And that's why God says, come to me for wisdom. I know more than you know about your own life. How many of us sitting in this room know how many hairs we have on our head? None of us. But God knows. Well, okay. Other than Brother Collins, none of us. Okay, so that's number two. Number two, ask for wisdom. Number three, discretion. In the same verse, Pharaoh said, there is none so discreet as you, Joseph. The word discreet comes from a Hebrew word that means to separate mentally. I wrote next to there, logic. Logic. In other words, discretion means mental analysis. Mental analysis. Joseph very methodically applied mental thought to the problems at hand. A lot of people get this idea that somehow faith can't really coexist with mental analysis. But the fact of the matter is, if we knew everything God knew, everything would be logical. The only reason why things are not logical is because we don't have all wisdom. God has all wisdom, and God is a very logical, orderly God. We all set our alarm clocks this morning because we knew that the earth was going to rotate again. Because why? Because we know how that works, that God set that up. Faith is believing that God knows what the future is, even when we can't see it. But many times God reveals things to us, and he expects us to act within his ordained laws and principles. Joseph had to analyze the problem in order to understand possible solutions to the problem. This is what Joseph was given. Joseph, we will have 7 years of plenty to prepare for 7 years of famine. That's it. It's all yours. Now you fix the problem. Do you know God did not need Joseph to fix that problem? Do you know that God could have fed the whole Egyptian nation without 7 years of preparation? Well, we know that because a few chapters later, he does it with Moses and manna. God rains food down from heaven for Moses. God, that's not fair. You made Joseph do 7 years of work when he could have just sat back and relaxed. You obviously didn't need Joseph. You could have done it with man. You could have done like you did with God, with Moses. You could have just rained food from heaven. Why did you make Joseph do all that? That's not for us to ask. It's for us to obey. God has a plan. God has a purpose. He does not need us to fulfill his will. God can use manna. He can use Noah. He can use Jonah, who is one of the most rebellious prophets in the Bible and never did get his attitude fixed. He can use Joseph, who's organized, or he can use Moses, who has, here we go, Moses, no prep time at all. I'm just going to rain food down from heaven. Through observation, God sets up these laws, and he ordains these principles. This is what we see through observation and through God's word. And sitting in my office for the 15 years that I've worked here at Hiles Anderson College, what I have observed is 99% of the time, that's a rough estimation, 99% of the time, the money that students put on their school bill, they get through following God's ordained principles. On occasion, I have witnessed God do something miraculous, something we would call supernatural. God is sovereign. God can do what he wants. If he wants to function supernaturally through you, or he wants to function naturally through his laws through you, that's God's prerogative. That is God's sovereign will. It is for us to obey God and the ordained principles that he's given to us. And this is what Joseph understood. This is what Moses understood. This is what the prophets understood. That it's not for us to question why God does what he does. It's for us to obey. And when God supernaturally intervenes, that's God's prerogative. A few years ago, I wasn't going to tell the story, but a few years ago, a year ago, our family, we were down to one car, and we have three kids, and we had a Saturn Ion, and it's a five passenger, but it's a, you know, four passenger, five passenger, you know, if you're really skinny. So we would throw our kids in the back, and you know, it's like five passenger, this is what we have, this is what God has provided. And in God's ordained will, reading the Bible, following God's laws, it is financially prudent to save money so you can buy a something instead of going into debt. So that's what I was attempting to do. I was attempting to save money, but it wasn't going that well, to buy a car. Meanwhile, we're driving a 5-passenger Saturn Ion. Well, we got to the point where the Saturn Ion gave us a scare, a real scare. Like, we were in 3 states over, and it wouldn't start. So, and I thought, at that moment, I'm going to have to go buy a car. I'm in New York State. I'm going to have to buy a car in New York just so we can get home. So, anyway, God miraculously worked that out, and we were able to get home with the Saturn Ion. But on the way home, I told my wife, I said, you know what? I said, we've waited a long time to buy a car. I said, we're just going to go into debt. And then, by the way, I'm not teaching or preaching here on whether it's wrong to go into debt to buy a car. That's not the point of this story. But on our way home, we were driving from New York to our house, and I pulled into the driveway. The next day I came, and a man walked into my office. And he said to me, over Christmas, because this is at Christmas time, the Holy Spirit really impressed on me to give you a vehicle, an 8-passenger vehicle. And he said, I don't even know why. I don't know if you need it. I mean, we were just going to pull it into your driveway while you were gone and just leave it there as a Christmas present. He's like, but I got to thinking, you might not even want it. I mean, you might not need it. And it reminded me that, yes, 99% of the time when we go, most of the people that have bought cars, Brother Froki, he's probably one of the oldest people in this room. He's probably bought many, many cars in his life. And most of those cars, God provides through financial principles of saving, of spending, of using wisely. But every once in a while, God will step through and he will supernaturally do something just to say, you know what? I can do things. I can work through you naturally, and I can work through you supernaturally. Through my observation sitting in my office with the thousands of students that have come through my office, I will just say that most of the time it is our job to follow God's principles, the natural financial principles that he's laid out in the book of Proverbs and throughout the Bible. So number three, discretion. Number four, the fourth ingredient that Joseph had was he had a plan. He had a plan. He had faith, he had wisdom, he had discretion, and then he had a plan. Joseph's plan was to save 20% of everything reaped during the 7 years of plenty. Was it a good plan? Apparently. I mean, it apparently worked. Did God give him that plan? Doesn't specifically say that. He had to mentally analyze the situation and come up with a solution. So he evaluated. He said, let's take 20%. Since we're now in this time of plenty, we'll take 20% and we will reserve this for the 7 years of famine. His plan was to gather the 20% into the cities from the fields that surrounded those cities. His plan, by the way, if you read this very carefully, his plan was to keep track of the amount that they collected. But it says in verse 49, and Joseph gathered corn as the sand of the sea, very much. What does it say? Until he left numbering, for it was without number. Sometimes our plans have to be altered. You know, his plan was to number all the grain, to keep track of all of it. It got to the point where he could no longer do that. He had to alter his plan. By the way, it also got to the point that the people ran out of money, and he had to alter his plan then as well. Joseph's plan was for the people to buy the food with money, and then later on, they ran out of money. He altered his plan again. Let me give you this definition. If you're in my personal finance class, you've heard this before, but I'll give you this definition again. A budget is an organizational plan stated in monetary terms. Why is a budget important? Because it states the priorities of your life in dollars. You show me what you spent in the last 30 days, and I will tell you what is important in your life. You say, well, that's not true. Okay, show me your last year. You show me a company's budget, I'll tell you what their priorities are. You show me your spending patterns. Don't listen to what people say. People will say all kinds of things. People will say, this is important, that's important, this is important. Okay, well, let's look and see what you actually spent your money on. Well, you know, just because I spent $3,472 at McDonald's, you know, doesn't mean that that's so. Those of you who work at McDonald's want more people, right? Okay. So the fourth thing that Joseph had was a plan. And we're going to look at a plan in a minute. But I want to give you the last one first. Number five, The fifth ingredient necessary to prepare for the future, and I don't know that any one of these is any more important than any other one, but the fifth thing that Joseph had was he had discipline. Discipline. A plan is great. Faith is great. Wisdom is wonderful. Discretion and being able to logic things out are wonderful. If you've ever, you know, we all know people who you can sit and you can talk to by the hour because they have mentally analyzed everything to the point where they can tell you why this happens and why that happens, but they never do anything. But they can tell you, this is why everything functions. I know exactly, you know, this is how we'll fix the national debt, and this is how, you know, Donald Trump be a better president. And so you have these people that are great at analyzing things, which is necessary, but without discipline, it just falls by the wayside. It becomes nothing. Let me give you some enemies of discipline. By the way, discipline is what allows us to execute the plan. A plan without discipline is really a worthless plan. Joseph began by enacting and executing his plan immediately. He immediately got to work. Can you imagine the temptation that Joseph must have had? Well, okay, I have 7 years. Now just imagine, those of you who have been in college for 4 years, you think, oh, 4 years, oh my goodness, 4 years. 7 years. So these are the things that Joseph had to fight against. One, procrastination. Procrastination is an enemy of discipline. Laziness is an enemy of discipline. Wastefulness is an enemy of discipline. Faithlessness, going back to number one, is an enemy of discipline. These four things will eat at our minds, and they will render us useless if we allow them to take over our plan. Put yourself in Joseph's situation there for just a minute. 7 years have gone by, or let's just say it's in the middle. 4 years have gone by. 4 years of hard work. 4 years of plenty. Can you imagine the temptation to say, oh my goodness, let's slack off. Let's take a little bit of a break here. I mean, we have so much grain, we can't even number it all. And really, is the famine going to be really that bad? I mean, God will come through. You know, you hear people say that. God will come through. God always comes through, but he expects you to be disciplined to do what he has directed you to do. He expects obedience from us. And God will come through. Can you imagine the temptation, the pushback that he must have had from the Egyptians? Come on, you're taking 20% of everything that we're working for. That's a lot of organization. That's a lot of stress for 7 years. And for really, after 7 years, your mind starts playing games with you. Did God really say that in that dream? I mean, did God really call me to Hiles Anderson College? Did I really hear that I was supposed to go to the mission field? You know, and that's after 1 year. That's after 6 months. That's after 4 months. You know, is that really what God wants me to do? 7 years, Joseph didn't get another word from God. Joseph didn't get another dream to interpret. God expected him to discipline himself for those 7 years to be ready. There wasn't a second, you know, upgrade to the interpretation. That was it. You do your job, this is it. So the last thing that Joseph had was discipline. Let me just end this part by saying, our discipline, or lack thereof, doesn't thwart God's will. We serve a sovereign, powerful God. Our discipline, or lack thereof, does not thwart God's will. But it can affect the part we play in it. You know, it reminds me of, and I wish I had a picture, I wish I had it, and I don't know if this is a perfect example, but this is reminds me of this concept. How many have ever seen one of those photo mosaic pictures? It's a picture, when you stand back from it far enough, it's a picture, and you can see, maybe it's a picture of a building or a picture of a person, but when you get real close, you realize that the whole picture is made up of lots of little pictures. Well, a few years ago at our church, you guys remember, we had a directory, and we were all told, come, get your picture taken. You know, they didn't tell us what to wear. They didn't tell us necessarily when to be there. And some people chose not to come. Some people chose to wear jeans. Some people chose to wear a suit. Some people just said, it's not important. I don't want to be there. I don't have time. Other things came up. procrastinate. So they just had an invitation, come get your picture taken to be in the church directory. Well, after it was all over, they put a photo mosaic picture together. And the photo mosaic picture was a picture of the entire church building. So it was like the front shot of the building. But when you got real, and it was a huge picture, used to hang up on the second floor of the church building. And when you got real close, though, you realized it was made up of everyone who came to get their picture taken for the directory. You know, no one told those people. Those people had free will. They had the free will to go get their picture taken. They had the free will to dress however they wanted to. But the designer of the photo mosaic picture took those people's discipline, those people's choices, and made the picture that he was going to make anyway. And if a computer can do that, God can take our discipline or lack thereof. He doesn't need us to accomplish his will. It's a privilege to be a part of his work. Let me just, in the back, I don't know if we have anyone to help me out here. Brother Stubblefield. Okay, we have a handout for everybody. In the 5 minutes that I have left remaining, go ahead and hand those out. This whole sermon was given for one reason. Brother Douglas had asked me to get you spiritually, mentally, but also physically prepared for the season of the summer and for the impending season that will come of the fall of 2018. When you look at it, please don't blank out yet. Let me try to explain it to you. If you have any extras, does anyone else still need one? There's a couple in the back there. Michael? Okay, let's just briefly, we're just going to briefly look at this. Here's an application. What can you do to prepare? One, you're going to need five things. You're going to need to have these five things that Joseph had. This is just a handout to kind of give you a little bit of some information. What you see here is I've entitled this the Summer Savings Plan for 2018. Across the top, you have a dollar amount. It starts at $8 an hour, and it goes up to $15 an hour. This plan obviously cannot incorporate every single variation of everyone in this room. So this is just a framework. It's just a framework for you to see that you can be prepared for the fall financially. You do not have to live under stress constantly wondering, how do I pay my bill? Or how come I'm behind on my bill? Or why do I have to be unethical with the people I owe money to? That is not God's plan for your life. God's plan is not for us to be unethical. Now, sometimes God will bring us through valleys and through different situations where we will have no choice but to say, God, I have nothing I can do. But sitting here on April 11th of 2018, that's not where you're sitting right now. You are sitting about to enter a prosperous time of your life. The next 4 months financially should be a prosperous time of your life. So do what Joseph did. Get a plan. This plan here starts at $8, like I said, $8 to $15. And basically, all this does is it says if you can take the first week off to find a job. That's all the leeway it gives you, though. So this is 15 weeks. The first week, you notice there's no dollar amounts on the first row. Because we're assuming some of you, though, can begin immediately, but some of you may need a few days to find a job. So it gives you 1 week of margin to say, I need to find a job. By the way, find a job immediately when you get home. Matter of fact, start working on it now. This is the time. Line up your job. Begin as soon as you get home. But this is 15 weeks. This is not saving 100% of everything you earn. This is saving 60%. This is saving 60% of what you earn. For some of you, that means you're going to have to adjust your lifestyle because you're used to spending 80% or 75%. Or you don't even know how much you spend because you don't keep track. But this is 60%. So you set aside 60%. And say, this is what I am going, I'm going to show my faith in God by being prepared for the fall semester because God has a plan for me, and I want to be ready for it. So save 60% working 40 hours a week. Now that everyone in this room is an adult, I think everyone here is 18 years and older, I'm not talking to high schoolers here. We're not talking, you know, to get a side job, you know. We're all fully functioning adults at this point. So it is important. The minimum would be 40 hours a week. 40 hours a week. Many of you can work more than that. You're not taking classes during the summer. For the most part, that is your main duty during the summer, is to work and to prepare for the fall. So this is working 40 hours a week, saving 60% of your gross wages. And I'll end by saying this. You can follow the column down. If you say you already know I'm going to be working a job that makes $10.50 an hour, find your $10.50 column and go down. And follow that plan the entire summer. That means by May 19th, I should have $252 in my bank account. It's spelled out for you. You don't have to wonder how much. You don't have to wonder if I'm on track. You know if you're on track. By May 26th, I'll need to have $504. By June 2nd, $756. Now, you notice some of the boxes are shaded. When you get to a shaded box, do you know what that means? It means you have now saved enough money for your first payment. So if you're making $10.50 an hour, when you get to June 16th with $1,260, you have now saved enough to pay for the September payment. But you keep going. You don't slack off. Just because you have so much coming in and God's blessing you, you don't say, now I'm going to take 3 weeks off because I want to go down to see my friends. This is where the discipline must take place. Because once you start getting $1,000, $2,000, or $3,000 in the bank, some of you have never had that much money in the bank. And you think, what could possibly go wrong now? I have $3,000 in the bank. So you keep working. You get to July 21st, and you now have enough for the first two payments. If you keep working by August 25th at $10.50 an hour, saving 60% of what you earn, you will have enough to pay the first three payments of the fall semester, which means you won't have a payment until December 1st. And again, that does not mean come to college and don't work. That means now you don't have to work 40 hours a week during the fall semester. You can work 25 or 30 to continue to get ready for the spring semester. But you won't have that burden to carry with you. This is just something practical that you can take with you. And I put the 5 points there at the bottom. Faith, I'll close by repeating them one more time. Faith, wisdom, discretion, a plan, and discipline. Thank you very much.